Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's dedicated to protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and His kingdom. Securing America is becoming more challenging by the day for reasons we will be covering in detail every weeknight in this new time slot. I want to thank Rob Sigg, his son Parker, and their superb team at Real America's Voice for making it possible for us to give you ready access to many of the best minds offering the clearest assessments of the challenges we face as a country and a civilization, and how we can translate the opportunities thus created to preserve our way of life and advance freedom. And for those of you accustomed to listening to us on Secure Freedom Radio, no worries. You'll be getting the same outstanding intelligence briefings on what I call the war for the free world under our new brand, Securing America. The war for the free world seems apt to me because, as my old boss Ronald Reagan used to say, quote, every generation faces an existential threat to freedom, unquote. He observed that it had to be fought for, defended, and passed on to our children to do the same. Well, our time's existential threat to freedom is upon us. In fact, today we face an unprecedented array of adversaries, both foreign and domestic, who seek nothing less than the destruction on our watch of what President Reagan correctly described as the last best hope of mankind, the United States of America. These adversaries are relentlessly waging unrestricted warfare, including the spiritual kind, to take America down. Should they succeed, Judeo-Christendom, Western civilization, and what's left of the free world would be unlikely to survive. Consequently, we are fighting for the highest possible stakes, and that makes our conversations with you incalculably important as we expose and analyze such threats and discuss what we must do about them. I think of this program as a kind of owner's manual for protecting our country, with a special emphasis on what you can do to help securing America. There are just a few examples that I want to go over with you about what we're up against and will be addressing with your help. Russian dictator Vladimir Putin is destroying Ukraine, a nation that is, whether we choose to acknowledge it or not, a part of the free world. True, it's not a member of NATO, nor part of the European Union. And it may suffer from corruption, as do most other nations, especially Russia. But no nation will be safe, including ours, if tyrants around the world are emboldened to act on their respective aggressive agendas by seeing Putin, literally, getting away with murder. That is especially the case since Putin's goal is not simply to conquer Ukraine. He seeks to dominate Europe. His threats to do so with force are increasingly backed by the capability to act on them. But even in the absence of further violent Russian attacks on, say, the Baltic states, Poland, Romania, or other NATO nations, Putin is intent on dominating the continent by exploiting its growing dependence on his country for energy. It is in our vital interest and ability to help counter that strategic peril. Meanwhile, China's dictator Xi Jinping has been watching closely how his ally Vladimir Putin fares with the invasion of Ukraine and the costs it entails, as he contemplates pulling the trigger on aggression of his own against Taiwan, either through non-kinetic coercion or actual force. If Putin succeeds in destroying Ukraine and ending its sovereignty, you can bet that Xi will feel irresistibly tempted to do the same to the Taiwanese and their de facto independence. If the Ukraine crisis teaches us anything, it is that every effort must be made to deter invasions before they happen, rather than applying punishments afterwards in the hope of limiting the damage. Unfortunately, deterrence of a Chinese attack on Taiwan is being undermined by arguments advanced to date against resisting Putin and his invasion. One nation that is no longer willing to wait to see how Ukraine plays out is Iran. It has carried out several attacks using ballistic missiles whose warheads landed in close proximity to the U.S. consulate in Erbil, Iraq. Such behavior makes completely unacceptable the further maniacal pursuit by the Biden administration of a nuclear agreement with the mullahs. This project proved to be a fool's errand during the Obama years, and with many of the same people leading the charge under both presidents, no good has come of it this time around either. In the process, however, billions of dollars have flowed to Tehran. Of course, neither those bribes nor the multilateral diplomacy that spawned them has translated into an actual end to the nuclear threat from Iran's regime. To the contrary, it is assiduously working to put into place all of the elements for a deliverable nuclear arsenal, from advanced centrifuges, ballistic missile developments and tests, and presumably underground nuclear experiments, thanks to Iran's friends in North Korea. If as a result the Ayatollahs do not already have nuclear weapons that are good to go, they surely will in the very near future. In short, we live at the moment in a world of hurt, especially if Vladimir Putin is seen as succeeding with his plan to use force to impose his will on Ukraine. Still other rogue regimes, perhaps including Kim Jong-un's in North Korea, the Pakistanis, the Taliban, Turkey, and the growing cohort of communist governments across Latin America, will probably be tempted to exploit the Biden team's evident weakness and irresolution to their respective benefit. We can hope that the invasion of Ukraine and the mugging by reality that it has entailed for a lot of nations, especially in Europe, will jar them into adopting the sort of robust war footings we must get on. If that happens, and if vigorous American leadership practicing Reagan-esque peace through strength is once again forthcoming, we just may be able to defeat our time's array of existential threats to freedom. The alternative is clearly unacceptable. Should we fail to overcome the combined malevolence, violence, and spiritual warfare now abroad in the world, we may well be condemned, as President Reagan warned, to, quote, telling our children and our children's children what it was like to live in the United States when men were free, unquote. That must not be our fate. We hope you will join us each weeknight, resolved to fight with the vision, tenacity, and courage of those who came before us, and bequeathed to every American our legacy of freedom, so that we will pass it on to the next generation to do the same. I want to welcome now Dr. Stephen Bryan, the former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense. He's been a congressional staff member and a defense contractor. He has been, of late, our senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, and he's one of the brightest guys I know on a whole host of issues involving our national security. Steve Bryan, it's good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Nice to be with you, Frank.
I want to start, if I could, very quickly, we've only got a minute or so before we have to take a short break, by just asking you, looking at how the Biden administration is conducting itself, Steve, vis-a-vis Iran, in the throes of endless humiliations that they've been dishing out to us, and not least now firing missiles in very close proximity to our consulate in Erbil, Iraq. Can they construe what we are doing as anything but just absolutely abject and contemptible groveling to get a deal? And if so, what can the possible good of it be?
Well, the Biden guys are very anxious, that's an understatement, to make a deal with Iran. I mean, they pledged to do it before they were elected.
Hold that thought, because that's exactly where we're going to pick up right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The reason Presidents Reagan and Trump practiced the national security policy they called peace through strength is that it works. Alternatives like Joe Biden's, which might be called peace through groveling, never have. Look no further than Team Biden's maniacal pursuit of a new nuclear deal with the mullahs of Iran. There appears to be no limit to the concessions and humiliations the Iranian regime is prepared to demand and that Biden and company are willing to accommodate. Even a salvo of ballistic missiles launched from Iran into the immediate vicinity of a U.S. consulate in Iraq is no impediment to further appeasement in the name of preventing Tehran from getting the bomb. Unfortunately, there is no hope, none, that Ayatollahs committed for over four decades to bringing death to America will forego the most efficient means of inflicting it. Enough already. This is Frank Gaffney.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. And after a very brief comment by Steve Bryan, we're going to pick up on the thought that the Iranians are not going to behave as we hope they will. Steve, I'm sorry to have had to interrupt you, but pick up where you left off.
Well, I you know, the administration has pledged to make a deal with Iran. They're very anxious to make a deal. They want to lift the sanctions. They even want to lift the sanctions on the Revolutionary Guard. I mean, the terrorism designation, for example, take it off. I mean, they're absolutely hell-bent on doing this, even though everyone tells them, I think correctly, that this deal's a bad deal. And no matter what it is, it's a bad deal because Iran's nuclear program's already pretty far advanced. And there's nothing in it, as far as we know, we haven't seen the details yet, but there's nothing really that's going to change it. They're going to stay with that program, the nuclear program. So, you know,
and that's really the key point. The administration keeps saying that we have to do a deal because an Iran with nuclear weapons is just unacceptable. But the point is, no matter what they do, how much they grovel, how much they make concessions, if the Iranians aren't actually going to give up the bomb, all you're doing is further increasing their appetite to have it and to wield it, quite possibly against Israel and even us. And that leads to this question. So what do we do, Steve Bryan, about this Iranian threat that will have better results than the course that this administration is on?
Well, let's take the bombing yesterday of Erbil as an example. They sent 12 Fatah 110 missiles. They're pretty good sized missiles. They carry 500 kilogram warheads fired at our consulate, which they claim was an Israeli Zionist operation. They were really firing it at our consulate. Let's face it. That was the whole idea. And at least one or two of those rockets landed in the courtyard of the consulate. They didn't hit the consulate, according to what the news says.
Wow.
But this is, you know, this is IRGC. This is the Revolutionary Guards. And this is, you know, they're just trying to stick it to us. You say, okay, you guys, you want to deal with us? We want maximum, you know, permissions from you. We want sanctions out. We want you to stop confronting us. We want a free hand in the Middle East. You know, we want to get rid of Israel. Those are their objectives. I mean, they're no secret about that.
Yeah, then no secret about it, and it just makes all the more crazy-making, really, what the administration is doing as it constantly is appeasing.
It's appeasing, but it's worse than appeasing. It's conceding. It's conceding territory. I mean, it's basically saying, okay, Iran, right, you can dominate the Middle East. You can dominate Iraq. You can dominate Saudi. You can dominate UAE. I mean, it's absolutely conceding the concessions. It's appeasement in the purest sense of this terrible country, terrible leadership of a country. Country itself is not terrible. It's the leaders.
And one of the upshots of it, Steve Bryan, is it not, is that countries, and you mentioned several of them, notably the Saudis, are simply now making a separate peace, if not directly with Iran, with Iran's
they've been negotiating
most important sponsor now, China.
Yeah, but they, well, they're two different things in a way.
They
have been negotiating with the Iranians, except that yesterday the Iranians said, called off the negotiations, because the Iranians are feeling stronger and stronger. They don't have to give anything away if they have U.S. permission to do what they want. Then that's what's going on here. The Saudis also are dealing with the Chinese because they don't trust us, particularly for important weapons. So they're, you know, they bought and have bought for years large ballistic missiles from China. But they may be buying other stuff, especially air defenses, especially aircraft. I mean, they just don't think we're reliable, and we're not.
And they may be selling oil to the Chinese as well, I would reckon. So, Steve, when you look at this, but it's, I suspect, going to be even more so, as and maybe in renminbi denominated transactions rather than dollars, which will be a very substantial change in the reserve status of the dollar if the petrodollar goes over the side. Steve, let me pivot to another problem that we're also facing that the administration seems to me to be making a hash up of, and that is Ukraine. I'd be interested in your thoughts as to both the likelihood that the Russians will finish the job more or less with impunity, crushing Ukraine, and that the message being sent to others around the world will be, again, more in the nature of make separate pieces. What is your sense of what's happening there at the moment? And as importantly, what should we be doing now, do you think?
Well, I mean, let's start at the beginning. I mean, both the United States, which has some culpability in this mess, and NATO, the NATO countries, signaled right at the start, even before the invasion, that we weren't going to do anything about it. So the Russians immediately knew they had a pretty much free hand. So that was a mistake. That was a huge mistake, because...
Not going to do anything about it, meaning
we weren't going to answer it militarily. I mean, we were not going to take any action to stop the Russians from invading Ukraine, because we just didn't think we could do anything about it. I mean, that was apparently the logic. But I remember when the British said we wouldn't, and we said we wouldn't, and NATO said they wouldn't, the head of NATO. So, I mean, this is a free pass to Putin. Now, the second part of your question was, what about the outcome? The Russians can stay there as long as they want, but they're going to continue to lose people, and their economy is going to continue to sink into the mud. I think the Russians are prepared to negotiate now, haltingly, but I think Putin's coming around to that point of view.
And what are the terms likely to be?
Well, I think that as far as the Ukrainians are concerned, they're going to have to give up the Donbass area, which is Luhansk and Donetsk, which anyway was a foregone conclusion. They're going to have to admit in some form that Crimea belongs to Russia. They're going to have to agree no NATO. I think that's an absolute requirement. And probably they're going to have to make some changes in the size of their military and how they operate, where they locate, that sort of thing. A kind of not demilitarization exactly, but lowering the conflict threshold from a Ukrainian point of view, in exchange for something from the Russian side, which would be to pull the troops back, far back, and not threaten Ukraine in future. So I think there's a basis for it. It's up to Putin now. I mean, Zelensky has signaled now that he's finally willing. Finally, I think what's happened here, to be completely honest, is that Zelensky has given up on Washington. He has reached the point where he realizes that he's not going to get enough help from Washington to stay in the war, and that he can't believe what Washington's telling him. And I think he's right to understand that. I'm sure the Israelis told him that, because they know very well. And I think that, therefore, Zelensky's ready to negotiate. Putin, the Russians said this morning that they're starting to think about seriously winding this thing up with a negotiation. But it's going to have to be at a very high level. Mm. And one of the critical issues here is Putin's health and whether he's capable of meeting with Zelensky outside of Russia, or whether he's willing to take that risk and make a deal. Right. Or they may do it by video conference. You know, it's not out of the question.
Yeah. Steve Bryan will be watching this closely, as will you, yeah. I know. The terms seem to be pretty draconian. The damage that's been done to Ukraine has been extensive and will likely become even worse in the days to come as these negotiations, if they do take place, progress. I hope that this will come to an end quickly and that there will be something left of Ukraine by the time it's all done. Steve Bryan, thank you for your insights on this as on the other of Iran and so much more. We'll look forward to consulting with you often in the days ahead here at Securing America. Next up, we're going to take stock of another problem, the enemies within, with Dr. Scott Powell right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Night after night in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a very, very heartfelt welcome to a friend and colleague of many years, Dr. Scott Powell. He is a senior fellow of the Discovery Institute and the author of a number of books, including Covert Cadre and most recently, Rediscovering America. It's good to have you with us. Welcome, Scott.
Frank, it's a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
Well, the pleasure is mine, and I wanted to ask you to talk about something that's weighing on me a lot, and I think on a lot of our audience as well, and that is the growing evidence that what we are confronting in our own country, domestically, our policies here, as well as foreign policies, certainly seems as though it's a, well, wrecking operation on the part of the Biden administration. I'm mindful of a number of different examples of it, ranging from Afghanistan to the border to inflation and the de-dollarization initiatives underway at the moment, as well as not least what's happening in Ukraine and also what's in prospect with respect to Iran. You've studied these internal foes for a long time, Scott, notably in your book, Covert Cadre. Is that operating here, would you say, a kind of Marxist ideological determination to take down our country?
It's probably the most plausible explanation, Frank.
Well, I was afraid you'd say that. the other explanations for it, are, I guess, are simple incompetence or senility of the president himself. But obviously, something more is going on here. Somebody's running the country. It's a little unclear who. But to what end do you think this is being taken?
Well, you know, we just celebrated President's Day last month, and both Washington and Lincoln warned us that should America fail or America fall, it would not be the result of a foreign invasion, but rather it would be from an internal failure. And I think we are seeing an internal failure, the likes of which we really haven't seen before. So there has to be an explanation for it. And I do think that there's an ideological explanation, and then there's the human there's the carrying out. But it is almost impossible to think that we would have all of these failures, really, of policy and not have a plausible behind-the-scenes explanation, because it's not, no one's saying why this is happening. But it's happening right before our very eyes.
It certainly is, and it certainly seems to be intensifying rather than getting better, as people like us are beginning to point out in earnest that something is seriously wrong. And I think a lot of Americans, again, have a gut feeling that that's the case, but aren't able to put their finger on why. Scott, you mentioned two of our most illustrious presidents. I know that a big part of your analysis in Rediscovering America is to draw on their experiences and the most important holidays of our country to both take inspiration for how great a country this is and why we don't want to lose it to enemies, well, foreign as well as domestic. Give us sort of a flavor of the main thrust of your findings in this regard.
Well, there's been no country in human history like America. There have been other states of cultural achievement, virtue, and efflorescence. Countries that come to mind, or city-states that come to mind, would include Athens under Pericles, Florence under the Medicis, Britain under Elizabeth and Shakespeare's time. These were clearly nation states, city states of virtue. But none of them were formed as America was. America is the first and really only country in human history that was founded on ideas and principles. And those ideas and principles were expressed in the Declaration of Independence. So this is very powerful. We have a very powerful nation because of those ideas. And to the extent we lose our connection with those ideas, or we don't carry those ideas out in everything, both domestic policy and foreign policy, then we lose the moral power of our nation. And that's what's happening right now. We have lost our moral power because we've departed from the principles of our founding.
I think it's fair to say, Scott, and again, you have studied this closely, notably back during the Cold War, when you documented an outfit called the Institute for Policy Studies, beavering away at sort of advancing this Marxist agenda. It's, as the communists used to say, no accident, comrade, is it, that we've seen this kind of deviation from our principles, our founding ideals and virtues. It's part of the takedown, is it not, that these... Well, Marxists, for want of a better term, are trying to wean us from all of that.
Absolutely. You know, the so-called Great Reset is really the great takedown of America. Yes, the origins of this could be traced, of course, back to Marx and the philosophers that he drew from, Hegel and others. But really the momentum for this takedown of Western civilization in the United States really started in the 1930s with the Frankfurt School of Marxism, which came out of Nazi Germany. These scholars came to the United States. They sort of ensconced themselves at Columbia and spread out from there. But they recognized, these were social psychologists. These were not traditional Marxist economists. They were social psychologists for the most part, Theodore Adorno, Herbert Marcuse, and others. And they understood that the way to take down the Western civ, the United States, would be to move, to work through the cultural institutions. Those would be the universities, the education, the media, the cultural institutions. So there's been a long march through those institutions. And that was also, this cultural thrust of Marxism was also, has its origins with Antonio Gramsci, who founded the Italian Communist Party. And this is really the best explanation for how we got to where we are today.
Yeah, and as you say, they set up shop in Columbia University, actually in the teachers' college, as I recall, there. And they spread out through academia to march through the institutions, starting, as you say, in the universities and now down to the grade school levels. And as you look at this sort of unbroken march through our institutions, Scott Powell, what is it that has proven to be the most effective antidote to it? Is there any that we can sort of rally around to try to prevent ultimately the object of the exercise, which is the takedown of our country?
Well, our founding principles are the most powerful, and they all come out of Judeo-Christianity. We were founded by very wise Christian men. We call them the founding fathers. And they understood the very principles of our Declaration and our Constitution are based on equality and those unalienable natural rights of life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, but also a recognition in the case of the founding of the country that people are justified in revolting against unjust rule. And so that was, so there was a moral basis for the revolution of the United States, actually, because we were moving to a higher level, if you will, a more moral society than what we were trying to break away from.
Well, let me ask you, Scott, we've only got 2 minutes left. Map out for us what, in light of these efforts to essentially fundamentally transform our country, as Barack Obama used to say, or simply take it out, as the Chinese communists and their United Front Work Department operations, including those inside our own country, clearly seek to do. What is your recommendation in terms of how we can apply these founding principles and virtues to defeat such enemies within and save our country?
Well, we're passing through this time, I believe, this dark period, and the positive side of it is that there's a great awakening going on. People are seeing right before their very eyes that when we depart from these principles that protect us, that guide and lead and protect us, that we get into very serious trouble. I mean, we have division on all sides, and it's always been the Marxist strategy to first demoralize society and then to divide society. So we are, and then to bring about destabilization and ultimately a crisis that could bring the target society down. And we are somewhere between the destabilization and the crisis stage. One could argue that we're well in a crisis right now.
So that's a diagnosis of the problem. And I guess the answer is that we need to get back to first principles, back to rediscovering America, as you put it in your book, and to the principles that have served us so well over so many years. If we do that, I think we'll be okay. If we don't, I fear there's greater peril ahead. Scott Powell, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. Thank you for your time today and for the great work you've done here and in your previous writings and at the Discovery Institute. I hope you'll come back to us with more soon. Next up, Bradley Thayer on the Chinese communist threat from without, right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Dr. Bradley Thayer is the co-author of How China Sees the World, Han Centrism and the Balance of Power in International Politics, and the forthcoming Understanding the China Threat. He's a prodigiously productive essayist and a member of the Committee on the Present Danger China. We're always delighted to have him with us. Dr. Thayer, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you for the opportunity.
Let me start by asking you about how Xi Jinping, the dictator of China, sees the threat or opportunity, if the case may be, with respect to Ukraine. You're very clear, I think, about, you know, his general attitude towards Taiwan. But does this look, based on what he's seen in terms of both the problems Putin has run into and the costs, to be something that's probably causing him to recalculate the advisability of going for it in Taiwan?
Frank, that's an excellent question. I think Xi's calculus is the following. First, the Ukraine war has benefited him because it has tied Putin to him. That is, now Russia's dependence on China is complete and will be so for the foreseeable future. Thus, China has benefited from Ukraine already because of the strong ties now that Moscow will have with Beijing. And that allows Xi also to profit in the reduction of the tension that had existed between Russia and China in the Central Asian republics, for example. That's now going to be minimized. Russia will also help China with intelligence cooperation, and of course with Russia's formidable nuclear capabilities, tactical as well as strategic capabilities that the Russians possess. What Russia has given Xi is a second front for the United States. The United States now faces a strategic two-front war problem in international politics. And so all of that is to Xi's benefit and to our cost. At the same time, Xi has to be disappointed in Russia's military performance. Thus, you've tied yourself to Putin, but Putin has not been able to deliver a quick and decisive victory in Ukraine. And this war seems to be going on. And increasingly, China, and rightfully so, is being seen as culpable, as being the force behind this war that allowed the war to occur and to allow Putin to recognize that he had Xi's support. All of that is very significant.
It is indeed. And the culpability is likely to get greater if the Chinese feel constrained to respond positively to the pleas from Putin for military assistance or economic help, purchasing of fuel and other things from Russia. And all of this is against the backdrop of a very pivotal meeting of the party Congress next fall. Talk a little bit, Bradley, about what the Xi calculus is likely to be in terms of both, you know, what he does with respect to Russia and what he does with respect to Taiwan, lest it jeopardize or perhaps secure for him the third term that he so earnestly desires.
Yes, Frank, that's critical for Xi to have the third term. He'll be crowned again, obviously, at that meeting. And this is important because it allows Xi to establish his bona fides for being Mao's successor. So Xi sees himself as a leader akin to Mao, and in fact greater than Mao, which is, of course, saying something in the context of the Chinese Communist Party. It shows his ambition. It shows really how detached from reality he is in terms of his designs and his ambitions in international politics. I think with respect to Taiwan, this is critically important. There are two major points there. First, we should always recognize that China could attack Taiwan at any time. And we should always be aware of the fog of peace. That is, because China did not attack yesterday and did not attack today, that they will not attack tomorrow. So we always want to be aware of that. An attack could occur at any time, a limited attack or a total, a major operation against Taiwan. Secondly, critically, I don't believe he's going to move against Taiwan until he's confident in a victory. And this gives us a very important window of opportunity. I don't believe he'll move against Taiwan until he recognizes that he can't, unlike Putin, that his operation against Taiwan will be overwhelming, it'll be quick, and it'll be decisive. And Taiwan will fall into his grasp. This gives the United States, the West, and its supporters around the world the opportunity to reinforce Taiwan, to begin to make explicit our commitments to Taiwan, begin to provide the military capabilities in every respect, air, land, sea, of course, with respect to giving Taiwan the capability to robustly defend itself conventionally in cooperation with a U.S. alliance, with a Japanese alliance, the Indians, the Australians as well can play major roles with respect to defending Taiwan. We need to do this begin, Frank, because we have this two-front war problem. We're now locked into confrontation with Russia, and we're locked into confrontation with China, and we have an opportunity to rapidly reinforce Taiwan at this point, and we must seize it.
Yeah. We're going to have to take just a short break here in a moment, Brad Thayer. But I did want to just say, you know, you've laid out very nicely the calculations. But if any lesson's been learned from this Ukraine business, it seems to me it has to be that we want to deter a war rather than have it waged with devastating effect. And most especially that the way to do that is to make absolutely clear to the prospective aggressor, in this case, China, that we will come to the aid of Taiwan in this case, and we will make it as hard a target as we possibly can in the meantime by ensuring, as you said, Bradley Thayer, that it has the capabilities, the Taiwanese government, that is, has the capabilities to maximize the harm that would befall the Chinese if they do threaten them. Brad, we're going to be right back with more on the other side about what else should we be doing to resist engagement right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back with Dr. Bradley Thayer. He is a member of the Committee on the Present Danger of China, I'm very pleased to say, and an enormously impressive contributor to, well, the understanding of the challenges that we're facing from the Chinese Communist Party. And Brad, one of the greatest challenges, it seems to me, is that we have done so much as a nation over the past few decades to enrich, empower, enable, and most especially of late, embolden the Chinese regime that is, it seems absolutely clear, determined to destroy this country. That would seem to be, you know, absurd, to say nothing of monstrously outrageous on the face of it. And yet, not only has it happened in the past, it's continuing to happen today. Talk a little bit about this so-called engagement program and what it is doing for and with the Chinese Communist Party that makes that danger we've just been discussing even greater.
It's a profound problem, Frank, and in many respects, it's one which is unimaginable for those of us who have, as you, obviously with your experience in the Department of Defense and elsewhere, those of us who had any type of ties to the Cold War find this situation to be alarming and grotesque simultaneously. How our enemy could intertwine himself with American society, economics, politics, with the cooperation of the American elite in every respect, business, media, academe, politics, is simply unimaginable. This could have never occurred against the Soviets. It would not have occurred against our wars against the Germans, the Italians, and the Japanese in World War II. But nonetheless, here we are. What needs to be done? What needs to be done is we need to recognize explicitly that China is the enemy of the United States. And it is the most formidable enemy that we have ever faced, given its prodigious power. This is its power is was given to it essentially by the West, by allowing China into the Western economic ecosystem, where it flourished, where it used its wealth to buy influence and to essentially allow its tentacles and its tendrils influence every aspect almost every aspect of the United States political system, economic system, financial system, as you have documented time and again. So what do we need to do? Educate the American people that this is an enemy, but also, secondly, importantly, leadership is necessary. To call attention to the fact that it is an enemy of the United States and must be dealt with as such. Thirdly, there has to be accountability. How did this happen? Who got rich from this situation? How is it that they were able to profit from the rise of our enemy and assist its rise to the point where it can be a direct challenge to American national security interests abroad, but also American society at home, where China has waged chemical warfare through fentanyl and other activities, economic warfare against the United States, ideological warfare against the United States in the homeland as well as abroad. These steps are necessary to undertake in order to bring about the recognition that this threat is real. It exists, and it must be dealt with. America can defeat China, but what is necessary, first of all, to recognize that it is an enemy and to have the leadership to pull us into the right the recognition that, in fact, it is, and to develop the right responses and strategies to do so.
This is really, an important sort of program of action, but you're so right, Brad Thayer, that it starts obviously with understanding the nature of the problem you've got. But beyond that, what do we do to unwind what's been described by, among others, Peter Schweitzer in his new book, Red Handed, as elite capture? You've talked about it. You've talked about accountability being required. That would seem to be the minimum needed. Doesn't there have to be some cost to those who engage in this? If not those who have done so to this point, certainly anybody who persists in it. Because as far as I can tell, Brad, people like Larry Fink on Wall Street, Ray Dalio, Steve Schwarzman, and others in the financial world, their counterparts in big tech, the big box stores for that matter, are determined to continue. Some say that, well, if it's illegal, they will stop, but they are doing everything they can, part of the elite capture, as you know so well, at the bidding of the Chinese Communist Party to lobby against any action that would make it illegal to be supporting our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party. So how do you see us unwinding the elite capture problem and penalizing those who might persist in engagement in the face of what we've learned about the dangers that it entails?
We have to have leadership, Frank, and the fact that we do not have it coming from the White House, and we do not have it on Capitol Hill, we do not have it in the centers of political leadership that, in fact, should identify this threat and devise solutions to address it. Because we do not have that leadership, we have to make it. And as you know, and as you're leading the committee's efforts, the Mad as Hell campaign are absolutely essential at calling attention to actually the individuals, BlackRock, many Vanguard, there's a host in the financial world, more broadly in the economic world, in our media, in academe, to call attention to the individuals who are acting willingly or unwittingly as efforts to undermine the fundamental values and political system of the United States, as well as our interests. So calling attention to these individuals, to these groups, to the recognition that, for example, retirees, their pension funds are being used to subsidize essentially, in essence, directly the Chinese Communist Party. An outrageous situation.
Right. With your money, folks. That's the point. That's what this Mad as Hell campaign is all about, is trying to impress upon people in the absence of leadership. And heavens knows, Brad Thayer, as you've pointed out, among others, the leadership of this country, starting with the commander in chief, has been deeply compromised as part of this elite capture strategy. So we find ourselves not only lacking the leadership, but I think facing conditions under which it's unlikely to emerge unless we insist upon it. And this is one of my powerful hopes, is that will be one of the upshots of this election coming up, is that there will be a mandate for real change in this regard. Brad Thayer, thanks for joining us. Come back to us again soon. I thank the rest of you for doing the same and for, I hope, feeling better equipped to help securing America. Go forth and multiply.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.